Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 29th of May, 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish.
Well. Yes, where do we start? Well, the European Council was meeting yesterday. This is the informal dinner of EU heads of state. And none other than Theresa May was there. It was a really exciting occasion. So they were apparently taking stock of the results of the European elections. And they were beginning the nomination process for the new heads of EU institutions. So the question is, will Federica Mogherini become the president of the European Commission? This is the big question. So Donald Tusk has started consultations with EU member states on this. And they're going to prepare the ground for decisions at the next EU summit on the 20th and the 21st of June. Now, Tusk made it clear that the process is that the EU Council, that's the heads of state and government, will make some gentle suggestions to the European Parliament, and the European Parliament will vote, apparently, on who will become the heads of the various EU institutions. So that's very exciting. But as you can see, Theresa was there. Let's just have a brief listen to what she had to say.
Well, I've been Prime Minister, I've been to something like 15 council meetings or more. At every one of those, I've been working hard to negotiate the best possible deal for the UK in leaving the European Union. And it's a matter of great regret to me that I haven't been able to deliver Brexit. But of course, that matter is now for my successor, and they will have to find a way of addressing the very strongly held views on both sides of this issue. And to do that and to get a majority in Parliament, as I said on Friday, I think will require compromise. But while we're still a member of the European Union, while I am Prime Minister, I'll be continuing to meet the obligations of the office and the duties of the office. And, of course, that includes being here today, where we're due to discuss the top jobs in EU institutions. And the UK will continue to play a constructive role during the time of this extension of Article 50.
So I apologise for inflicting that on our viewers and listeners, but I thought, since this is probably the last European Council meeting that she's going to attend, we should listen to what she had to say. So what did she have to say? Of course, that it's really up to her successor what happens with respect to Brexit. It's not her problem anymore. But the UK, since we're still in, is behaving like a full member, and of course will take part in helping choose the new heads of the EU institutions, because we will fulfil our obligations and so on as full members of the European Union until the day we leave. And the question remains to be, will we leave? But Donald Tusk had a couple of interesting comments as well. And the British media this morning going a bit doolally over what he had to say. So have a listen to this.
Tonight, the EU leaders met to assess the outcome of the European elections and to discuss what these results mean for the EU, as well as for nominating the new heads of the European institutions. First and foremost, we are very happy about the turnout, which was the highest in 25 years. This proves that the EU is a strong pan-European democracy. In fact, as people have become more pro-European, some major Eurosceptic parties have abandoned the anti-EU slogans and presented themselves as EU reformers. This is a positive development. I have no doubt that one of the reasons why people on the continent voted for a pro-European majority is also Brexit. As Europeans see what Brexit means in practice, they also draw conclusions. Brexit has been a vaccine against anti-EU propaganda and fake news.
So Brexit has been a vaccine against anti-EU propaganda and fake news, Brian. And but he was very vociferous that the result of the EU election with the highest turnout ever has been extremely positive for this fantastic democracy that is the European Union.
Apart from in France.
But of course, even the anti-EU parties are now looking at reform rather than destroying. But so he's very, very happy
That's good.
I couldn't help smiling.
The only thing that comes into my mind, Mike, when we're talking about Brexit and the fact that we're coming out but not coming out, is that excellent comedian, I've forgotten his name, but describing it was like being trapped inside Burger King.
Yes.
And you did a deal to get out two years later. If you paid enough money.
If you pay enough money. Well, yeah. Well, look, the question then is, who is going to be Theresa May's successor? Who is going to take up the reins to get us out or not of the European Union? And so I thought we would just produce a little graph to show exactly what's going on at the moment. So Jeremy Hunt in the lead with 28 MPs supporting him so far. Boris Johnson second with 26. Then Michael Gove, not too far behind, 25. Dominic Raab, 22. Then it starts to drift off. So here is Sajid Javid with 12. Matt Hancock, 9. Esther McVeigh, 6. Mark Harper, 4. Rory Stewart only has 3 people supporting him so far. It's a real shame for him. Andrea Leadsom, 2. And Kit Malthouse, 2. So that's where we stand at the moment. But Matt Hancock has gone out of his way to encourage people to vote for him because he decided to attack Boris Johnson in a particular way because apparently Boris Johnson a year or so ago had made some comment with respect to Brexit and business complaining about Brexit. Boris Johnson was reported last year to have said F business, as in, I'm not going to say what he said, but Matt Hancock thought he should respond to that. To the people who say F business, I say...
Right.
Yes.
And this is the level of candidate that we now have to become leader of the Tory party and thereby Prime Minister of the country.
Absolutely. Margot James, who succeeded him as digital minister, said that this made him unfit to hold high office. And I think
they all are. That's the depressing thing, Mike.
That is
the quality of these people is truly appalling.
Absolutely. But let's not leave Boris there, because here he is. Thank you very much to Ned Pamphilon for this fantastic image of Boris from last year, I think is when he produced this one. But I mean, Boris is heading off to court, apparently. It's a real shame. He's been summoned to face allegations of misconduct in public office. So misconduct in public office, it's brought against someone who obviously carries some kind of official function, civil servant or an MP, and they're considered to be guilty of misconduct in public office if a prosecution can prove that they willfully neglected to perform their duty. So what's this about? Well, this was a crowdfunded court case, Brian, where somebody decided to take Boris to court on the misconduct charges on the basis of his claim that we were spending £350 million a week giving that money to the EU.
Yeah.
This is when he was in the run-up to the 2016 referendum. So that has finally come to court. And a judge today has decided that he has to attend court. There'll be a preliminary hearing in Westminster's Magistrates Court, and then the case will go to the Crown Court. Now, if he's found guilty, the penalty for that is up to life imprisonment. I don't know what the prospects of success are there. I don't agree with the court case necessarily, but would I be sad to see somebody actually prosecuted on this issue? I think it's about time we started to see MPs being held to account.
Yes. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. Let's come on to the subject of Angela Merkel, because she's been warning against dark forces on the rise in Europe. And I have to say, I wonder what these forces might be. We'll give you a bit more of the article here. So German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said there's work to be done in Germany to face up to the dark forces that are finding mainstream support there and in other parts of the world. In Germany, obviously, they've always have to be seen in a certain context, in the context of our past, which means that we have to be much more vigilant than others. So she's very worried. What are they seeing? Are they simply so worried because people are beginning to see through the EU project now, Mike, and they're starting to speak out and criticise what is happening and stand up to be counted. Are they the dark forces or am I missing something?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And of course, if anybody was paying attention to what Donald Tusk was saying a couple of minutes ago, he was trying to put a positive spin on the results of the EU elections. But I think actually those results have caused people in the establishment of the EU to take a second look, and maybe they're not quite so comfortable as they were 2 weeks ago.
I think that's correct. And let's jump over to this. This is a document that's been circulating on the internet for a couple of days. It appears to be an Army Ministry of Defence document about the extreme right wing. So indicators and warnings, look out for individuals who. Now, I looked at this document. I thought to myself, is it genuine? And at the moment, we cannot say to 100% is genuine, but there's certain information on this particular document that I think is of great interest, and it seems to stack up. So let's have a little look at what's being said. So we're worried about the extreme right wing, and this is advice to people in the army as to what to look out for. Now, there's a number of things described, because we could have people who were describing multicultural towns as lost, or discuss the creation of white-only communities, or what else have we got? Refer to individuals ready to challenge their extreme right-wing agenda, that they're being indoctrinated. So there's various things in the boxes, but a number of them stuck out. And this is the first one. Anybody who described themselves as a patriot. Now, I find this a remarkable thing, because if you've joined the army, one could say that chances are you would describe yourself as a patriot.
Surely everybody that joins the military, no matter what the service, is a patriot.
Well, you could do it on a security clearance angle, Mike, that you would have to be a patriot in order to be permitted to come into the army. But of course, it's a volunteer army, so it's generally patriots that are going to join. But now the government is on the lookout for patriots, and I don't know whether we've got most of the army reporting each other in order to keep themselves safe.
Right.
But it gets better, because if you say somebody is a traitor to this country, then we've also got a problem. And many people, of course, are looking at politicians now and saying they're traitors. So this is quite an interesting one. Where else can we go? Well, we can go down here. We need some glasses here. Make inaccurate generalizations about the left or government. Now, this really caught my attention, and this is one of the reasons I'll come onto this a bit more, why I believe this document is genuine, because I think that when you analyse it, we can see that the government has actually got a hand in this. So if you come out with generalisations about the left wing politics or the government, then you're somebody who should be reported, with the implication here that to say that the government is wrong in a general way means that you are extreme right wing. Mm. This is very, very dangerous stuff. To see it in this country in 2019 is truly appalling. How about this one? Involve colleagues in closed social media groups. So let's say that you're a local WI guild and you want to have your conversations about your WI matters, you don't want everybody coming in, you run a closed group, then the army's on the lookout for you, because presumably you're not a patriot. Well, maybe you should be a patriot, but you're not a patriot.
But this is complete nonsense. Most of the military groups on social media are private groups, because they don't want people that haven't served taking part. These are discussions amongst people that colleagues, ex-colleagues, people that have worked together in the past. Why would they have those open to the public?
Well, I think they need to be open, because the government wants to be inside every box where people are communicating. But the more I looked at this, did I think that this was genuine? I have to say, at the moment, I do think it's a genuine document. And I think the government is giving away lots of information about itself. Yeah. Well, let's carry on. This one. We should be worried about individuals who become increasingly angry at perceived injustices or threats to so-called national identity. So let's say you're somebody who's getting pretty angry at the fact that it's quite clear we've got child abuse on a massive scale in this country, and you stand up to be counted on that and you put some passion into it, then the government is interested in you. And you note the little twist there, perceived injustices. Now, we know that there are many injustices going on in UK on a daily basis because people are reporting. But if you dare say so, then the government is going to be looking out at you, for you, as a person who is a potential right-wing extremist. And we'll pop back up to the top. I love this one. Refer to political correctness as some left-wing or communist plot. Well, of course, if you go to what political correctness is, it does actually come out of the left-wing political agenda. There's no question of that. Is this the government getting a little bit worried that people are now starting to get a little bit too close to the truth, Mike? I don't know. So if there's somebody out there who can provide us some additional evidence about the provenance of that document, we'd like to know. We'll see whether we can get an answer from the Ministry of Defence. But this, if I now carry on, these are some of the things that led me to believe this document is genuine. At the bottom of your screen there, it's talking about WARP, and that's Army Warning Advisory and Reporting Point, WARP. If we go investigating that, we come back to the government and data, and here we've got Army WARP Security Incident Database. This is going back to 2013. So we're already 6 years into the fact that we've got another layer of state spying on people who may dare to disagree with the British government. And if we go one further to that, we can have a look at the National Cyber Security Centre. What is a WARP? Is a community-based service where members can receive and share up-to-date advice on information security threats, incidents and solutions. And they say that the creation of WARPs in public sector communities where people work together and share information on threats, incidents and solutions can address many of these problems in a cost-effective manner. So this isn't one organisation that is sort of at work in the public sector. This is setting up little cells inside the public sector, and those cells are reporting on what's going on. And as I say this, what is in my head, this is absolutely the Stasi model. There is no question of this. This is how the state sets up a massive spying apparatus. So if you're at work, you're frightened of what you say because somebody could be a member of that cell. If you're in the local WI club, you need to be worried because somebody there may be spying for the government. This is very, very dangerous stuff. And here we have it coming to the surface in Britain in 2019 under Theresa May's Conservative government. And we get a clue as to what's behind it all here, because here's a report from the constabulary up in the northwest, extreme right-wing symbols, numbers and acronyms. Now, if you can't read the red warning on your screen, it's the police saying, these are open source images. We don't support any of them. So obviously the police...
They feel the need to have their own disclaimer on their
well,
document.
The police are so worried that if they tell other people about these images, they could actually be branded right-wing extremists. Shows you the depth of the paranoia which has come into this country. So it goes on with some text which tells you what to look out for with extreme right-wing. But it's pretty easy because most of this is based on images. And of course, you've got anything and everything to do with the Nazi regime, flags, insignia, swastikas, whatever it is. And everything here is that if you're right wing, you are a right wing extremist and you're going to cause a problem to the government. So bringing this together, we can have a look at what is really happening here. So the government is creating an impression of extremists in the public mind, and extremists are nasty right-wing Nazis. There's no change to that. If you are branded extreme, that is what you are. So here's some of the symbology they're pointing to. We're spinning to create an impression of extremists in the public mind. Anybody who dares challenge the government is that nasty right-wing Nazi. And of course, we're now seeing how this is being pushed into the armed forces. And that is then spun so that we can now draw in subjects that the government fear. It all becomes terrorism. And let's remind ourselves what the government has shown it fears. It fears patriots. It fears anybody who dares to talk about traitors. Yet, of course, we know there are many traitors in Westminster at the moment. If you generalise about the left or the government, you are a right-wing extremist. Mm. If you use closed social media groups, you're in that bracket. If you become angry at perceived injustices or threats to so-called national identity, you are a terrorist, right-wing extremist. And if you dare to challenge political correctness. Now, these really, I think, this is the government telling us very clearly what they're frightened of. And if we look at what they're frightened of, remarkably simple things, the truth, political correctness, or calling the government out for what it is. Follow through a little bit. This is where UK society is being taken very quickly. We've got the Prevent strategy running, local councils, schools and others developing projects to stop people becoming terrorists. That's the claim. So far, we've got 42,000 people participating in 142 projects. Now, that's a few years old now, 2015-16. So how many thousand people have been involved in projects? And what were these Prevent projects? Because we're not being told by mainstream media. But they're also looking to channel. And channel is identifying anybody that could be a problem. Police working with local councils, social workers, NHS staff and schools, and the justice system to identify those at risk of terrorism. Who gets selected for that job? I don't know.
No.
We don't know. And they report back to Prevent. But then we can also bring in MAPA, which we've spoken about on many occasions, the multi-agency public protection arrangements. These are little groups across the country, 63 MAPA districts, and they're spying on people who could be a threat to the authorities. And we've got the same sort of team, police, local authorities, NHS, mental health teams, education and others all swept up into this system. And on the side now, we've got the National Cybersecurity Centre with its warning, advice and reporting points, which we've just taken you through with the army. They cover small groups, 20 to 100 people at a time. That means there must be a lot of warp groups. Mm. And where are they? Well, they're embedded in government, high level public sector, the military, local authorities and education. The Stasi state would have been proud of this, Mike, because this is all backed up, of course, by rapid databasing, cameras, facial recognition, unbelievably dangerous. And try one line to fill in there, because, of course, Prevent and MAPA are reporting to each other. This is from the Parliament website, where this is the statistics, the final sentence in the paragraph answered by Mr. Ben Wallace, say, to build resilience in communities against radicalisation in 2015-16, we've delivered 142 projects, reaching over 42,000 participants. If anybody can help us with the total figure for participants now, we'd be very grateful for that. And I'm just going to end this segment by saying that, of course, we've been warning about the Army 77 Brigade, which is spying on people. They're looking for so-called change agents. And there can be no doubt that 77 Brigade will be filtering information back into that spying system. Mm. If we were describing one of the former Soviet territories, this would be quite a normal thing to be talking about, but apparently we're in a Western democracy called the United Kingdom.
Mm. Now, on the UK Column website, as of yesterday, is this article, GC Math and the Persecution of David Noakes, Lynn Thayer and Immunobiotech. It's by Ian Davis. Ian is a UK Column member, but he publishes a blog called In This Together. So you can find that at in-this-together.com. He gave us permission to republish this article because we thought it was a fantastic, it's a long read, but we thought it was a fantastic in-depth summary of the situation around David Noakes and Lynn Thayer and GC MAF. And I just wanted to mention this little section of it because he says in this, when the FDA announced the scale of the pharmaceutical drug deaths in the USA, not only did the MHRA, that's the Medical Health Regulatory Authority in the UK, not only did the MHRA refuse to measure or reveal the corresponding statistics in the UK, they tried to deny the statistics existed. To this day, they still don't bother to record this vital data, which poses the question, what purpose they serve. They don't maintain long-term statistics. They actually destroy all medication data after 15 years, seeing as the vast majority of medications they have approved have been on the market for more than 15 years. This means, for some completely inexplicable reason, the MHRA has destroyed all the data it based its licensing decisions on. In 2011, this prompted Dr. Ben Goldacre to observe the MHRA needs to recognise that the world has changed. It is no longer acceptable for decisions about medicines to be based on secret meetings about secret information that is then shredded. So that I thought was a very interesting point. And the reason was, well, I had intended to cover this on the news a week or two ago, but we'd run out of time at the time. So let's bring it back on because here's the MHRA. Issuing a warning about a particular vaccine. They said, we have recently received two reports of fatal adverse reactions to the yellow fever vaccine, Stamaril, due to an increased risk of life-threatening reactions. The vaccine must not be given to anyone with a medical history of thymus dysfunction or who is immunosuppressed. They went on to say, in addition, extreme caution must be used and a careful risk assessment conducted before vaccination of people aged 60 years and older due to substantially increased risk of such adverse reactions in this age group. So, Brian, my question is, I absolutely encourage people to share this article on the UK Column website as widely as possible because it is a fantastic overview of the GC MAF issue. But the question then is, how many mainstream media outlets actually warned about this vaccine and this warning from the MHRA, a total of none that I'm aware of.
Well, we see a lot of news, Mike, and a lot of people are sending us news, particularly on the subject of vaccines, and we haven't received anything, so it looks unlikely that it's been reported.
So it's extremely important that David Noakes' story is shared as widely as possible. That is a fantastic summary of it. Please do share it. And David, I believe, will be a guest on tomorrow night's Humanity versus Insanity with Ian R. Crane. Yeah. We'll mention that a little bit later in the programme again.
OK. Well, I'd just like to put this lady on screen again, Georgia Poulikan, the French lawyer who has been video blogging what's been happening with yellow vests in France. Georgia came over to England recently. It's becoming very, very hostile for it in France. We were able to do this video, which is on screen. You can find it on the UK Column website. But I just wanted to say thank you very much to everybody who has been to see that video. We're now over 18,000 views and climbing. We have recently completed the French subtitles, which is going to make a big difference for the French audience. But what I just wanted to indicate here is that if you go and have a look at the YouTube video, underneath you will find old comments. This fascinated me. I got caught out by this initially because all I could find were comments that were days old, even though yesterday I think it was about 850 extra people viewed the video. And we've had a discussion about this, Mike, and you're pointing out that the default position on the YouTube is top comment.
Well, no, it's what they think are the most relevant comments, which means that there's an algorithm deciding which comments to show. And we're seeing this in other social media platforms as well. On Twitter, for example, the main news feed for people is what they consider to be the most relevant material for you. And you've got to actually go and change a setting to decide that you actually want to see the stuff which is
most recent first.
So you know, we're just increasingly seeing social media companies wanting to decide for us, what is the most appropriate thing for us to see.
Yeah. So I encourage you to see that video if you haven't. Even if you have seen it, do go there, select latest comment first. There's a little button under the video, and have a look at some of the comments coming through. We've been delighted that alongside the comments in English, we've been getting a lot of very, very positive feedback in French. And this tells us that people in France are watching the video. So hopefully when the subtitle version goes out, in fact, it's up on the UK Column website already, we should be seeing a lot more people.
Okay, so just a quick reminder, if you'd like to support the UK Column, please head over to the community website. You can find several ways to do that there. That's ukcolumn.org/community.
Okay, and there's one I wanted to just bring up on screen. We're constantly saying that Twitter is a very powerful vehicle for getting information out. We're encouraging all of our viewers and listeners to use Twitter. We know some people are wary and say, well, there's a lot of nonsense on Twitter. Indeed, there is. But it's extremely powerful about getting out factual information. This was a little clip that we put out yesterday, and it's showing, of course, your good self, Mike, with Patrick Henningsen talking about EU Defence Union and how people will not use the correct description and what happens. So when I took the screenshot, that was up at 1,358 views. We need people to retweet this material. That's why we're putting it out there. If you watch it, you like it, please retweet, because that pushes the information out.
Now, just might as well mention this now then, Brian, since you've said that, because next month's monthly meeting, UK Column meeting, which is the third Wednesday of June, I can't remember what the date is of that, in the George, David Ellis and I will be giving a briefing to people on how to use Twitter. So we'd like to encourage more than the normal crowd to come along to that, if you'd like to go through a little tutorial on the use of Twitter for these purposes.
Yeah, excellent.
Just a quick reminder that the AV10 DVDs are available on the UK Column website. If anybody would like to pick up a set from there, they will be shipping on the 1st of July. So this is pre-order, and there's a bit of a discount if you want to pre-order those now. So ukcolumn.org/community/UKcolumnshop. Just a brief reminder again, tomorrow, 7:30 p.m., Ian Crane will be doing another Humanity versus Insanity with my head is gone, Brian.
Yeah, it happens.
With David Noakes.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay. Right. Let's head over to we'll talk about Syria here. And well, this is the Working Group on Syria Propaganda and Media. This is Paul McKeague, David Miller and Piers Robinson. And we mentioned this. This is their report into the leaked document that they received on the OPCW final report on Douma. And of course, the leaked document was an engineer's report, which seemed to contradict some of the material that was in the final Douma report, and certainly raises many important questions. That quick as a flash, didn't get much media coverage, in the mainstream media at least. So what they say is that the only coverage of the Western corporate media has been by Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday, Robert Fisk in The Independent, and Tucker Carlson on Fox. Other journalists who have been in touch with us have told us that their stories were spiked by the editors. As expected, the story has reached much larger numbers through websites and videos that have disseminated that. So they have now had some responses, and so they've issued some comments on the official response to the release of the engineering assessment of the Douma cylinders. So they highlight an email from the OPCW on the 16th of May, which says, pursuant to its established policies and practices, the OPCW Technical Secretariat is conducting an internal investigation about the unauthorised release of the document in question. Piers and his team are taking that as an admission by the OPCW that the document is genuine. So that's the first step. They also highlight an email that was sent by the OPCW on the 11th of May, which says the document you shared with us is not part of any material published by the FFM, and the individual mentioned in the document has never been a member of the FFM. This is the group that was doing the investigation into Duma. So that's what that's the official statement from the OPCW. And also in this little these comments, they talk about Scott Lucas, for example, because there's been some, well, very little mainstream media coverage, as we mentioned, actually in the form of actual articles, but a couple of comments on Twitter, not the usual barrage of comments that usually come on Twitter from mainstream media journalists and so on. But they're highlighting Scott Lucas, that on the 16th of May, he reported that Henderson, who's the alleged author of the report, of the leaked report, was writing what was, in effect, a dissenting assessment from that of most of the OPCW's team and consultant experts. His findings were considered, but they were in a minority opinion as the final report was written. So this is the mainstream sort of justification for this leaked report. Then he went on to say, or in another tweet to say, I know how the OPCW review process was conducted and what place Henderson's assessment had in it. So he was then challenged to explain his connection to the OPCW, and he did not answer. And Peter Hitchens had reported on the 24th of May that the OPCW Public Affairs had refused to comment on whether Scott Lucas was receiving authorised briefings from the OPCW. If you want to know a bit more about Scott Lucas, have a look at Vanessa Bailey's article on the UK Column website, which is called Syria, Pro-Regime Change, Academic Bias in the UK. Fantastic article. But the message seems to be from the typically biased journalists, the ones that normally come out and attack whenever there's anything pro-Syrian appearing in the media. The excuse seems to be based on the idea that this guy was a disgruntled employee who's just trying to cause trouble. I'm afraid that doesn't really fly.
No, I think there's some desperation there.
Okay.
I'm smiling slightly. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. Arrest after drone sighted near nuclear submarine. Now, this is a few days old. I think this was the beginning of May. This is from the Lochside Press. And what they're saying is police have arrested a man this week for flying a drone too close to a Royal Navy submarine in the Clyde. Police Scotland and Inverclyde said that a 52-year-old man had been arrested. They added, drones can pose a risk to the public and community and should only be used responsibly, safely and legally. So, Brian, this was supposedly an Astute-class submarine, so a nuclear submarine, and this guy was flying his drone too close, apparently. And so my question to you is the steel used in an Astute-class submarine so fragile that should he have lost control of his drone and it should smash into the top, that it would punch a hole? Is this why it would be dangerous to fly over these things?
I would so hope close? To say, Mike, that probably that wouldn't happen. I mean, the steel's quite thick, isn't it? Because they dive to quite considerable depths where there's a lot of pressure. So the worst thing is that the little drone could have bounced off and dropped in the water. That might have taught the man flying it a lesson. But I think what we've got going on here, this is building up the hype that the public are not going to be allowed to use drones. It will only be the authorities that can use drones. But maybe the steel is now so thin that the little drone could have caused a problem. Mm. We don't know. Well, we'll end on what I think is a good note anyway. We are continuing to watch this protest about the over-sexualisation of very young children in schools, and we reported last week about Muslims in Birmingham protesting. They've been protesting for several months. We said that there are now Christian groups who are standing alongside them. Neither members of Muslim and the Christian groups want this highly sexualized education of very young children to take place. This Christian Concern article was sent through to us this morning. Vicar resigns after being silenced over trans ideology concerns at church primary school. And this was around the case where a 12-year-old boy had been allowed to stand up in front of the class and say that he was changing to a girl. The only problem was that the parents didn't actually know at the time. And this was the result of at least one training group coming into the school to, quote, educate the children into sexual matters. So I think it's extremely interesting that far from creating division in communities, we've got the government's draconian sex education for very young children is now bringing Christian and Muslim communities together. I think this is very powerful. We'll end there. We'll say thank you very much to all our supporters. Thank you also to the gentleman who turned up at our door yesterday saying he'd like to make a donation to the UK column. That was extremely nice. We'll say to our other viewers and listeners, if you're not already a subscriber, please subscribe to UK column and or give a donation, because we can only do what we do with your financial support. That's it for today. We'll be back at the same time on Friday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.